Well, if you're a potential homeowner, hiring a qualified home inspector can make the difference between sinking lots of dough into a what we sometimes call a money pit or buying a well-maintained and solid home. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. John Freiberger of Freiberger & Associates in Fitchburg here to share what he knows about keeping your home in good shape and how to save money at the same time. He specializes in evaluating older structures, but happy to answer any questions that you might have about homes and the home inspection process. And John, thanks for coming by.
Great to be here again, Larry.
It's really great to have you here. And here we got spring, although it's been a little chilly across most of the state. Busy time for home inspectors, spring?
It certainly seems to be right now, Larry, with the recovering economy in Dane County, which is where most of the jobs in Wisconsin seem to be being generated. There really is just a panic to buy homes and a very, very limited inventory from which to choose. So some really interesting stuff is coming on the market, Larry.
Some places better than others. Well, let's go through a basic home inspection here. What kinds of things, you know, you've been in this business a long time. What kinds of things do you look out for?
Well, my specialty is old homes.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things about old homes is you have to really know how they are constructed. Because when you're looking at an old house from the 1880s, that house may be balloon construction, and it's very important to understand what time has done to that house.
Yeah.
We also have to understand what the mechanical systems were like back then, when we had lead pipes, knob and tube, heavy use of asbestos, heavy use of lead paint. So one of the things that I look at is I really try to differentiate what do you need to expect from an old house that you wouldn't expect if you were buying a brand new house that's being built in Madison today.
Yeah, and so you go through this and you come up, I mean, you have a very extensive review. How do you provide information to the client about what you find?
Most home inspectors, Larry, use a fill-in-the-blank sort of report, and we don't. We actually write a report. We have sort of a template that we follow, but I look at so many peculiar homes and so many very old homes. I get called out to things like log cabins.
Yeah, old log cabins.
So we actually prepare several thousand-word written report for people, and where necessary, we will also add photographs to help explain what we are reporting to them. Many home inspectors, I think, prefer to go through the house by themselves or maybe with the broker. 99% of the time, I drag the prospective buyers along with me. Mm-hmm. And we will discuss things like energy efficiency, maintenance, the value of some of this beautiful old wainscoting and things we see in the old houses. So I really like to have a 2 to 3 hour dialogue with people before they even get my written report.
That makes a lot of sense to me. You mentioned that you specialize a bit. You could certainly handle any house. You specialize in older homes. Is this typical, or are there more generalists out there that are people that don't mind?
I think most people are generalists. We do find quite a few home inspectors that will call us in when we get into old house issues, especially things like old stone foundations.
Yeah.
The nice thing about many home inspectors is they know what they know and they know what they don't know. And they call out to have an expert come in and look at anything that they're really not sure of. And that's one of the things that's very important when you have a home inspection, is the home inspection may not be the entire amount of information you get on the house.
Oh.
So you're really starting, you're really depending upon that real estate broker, that listing broker. By Wisconsin law, that broker is responsible for filling out what's called a real estate condition report. The broker has to report everything that they know that is wrong with that house. Now, if I was selling my house and I knew there was some major issue and I didn't want to tell the broker and the broker saw it, the broker would have to list it. Even if I said, Mrs. Smith, please don't list that. It'll mess up the sale. So, and Wisconsin law also holds the broker liable for 6 years for that real estate condition report.
So it's 5.5 years down the road
if they lied to you, and you know that they lied to you, and that is certainly happened in Wisconsin where brokers have been brought into court for filing false information. So you're really going to start with that. And most times you're going to supply that to the home inspector, because if there are four or five issues checked off in the broker's real estate condition report, you want the inspector to really look at those and give you a little bit more detail.
How do you find an inspector? What should you look for? I mean, certainly you can go to the quote-unquote yellow pages anymore, online yellow pages maybe, and find a whole list of inspectors, but what do you look for?
I think that the absolute basis, of course, you cannot be an inspector in Wisconsin unless you're a registered inspector. And, of course, in Wisconsin, you can check almost everything online. So if Mr. Smith says he's an inspector, you can actually look up his credential online at the Department of Safety and Professional Services. So that's the basic. The person has to be registered. The next thing to probably check is to see whether that person is a member of any professional associations. Because if they're a member of the National Association of Home Inspectors, the American Society of Home Inspectors, they're taking a little bit of extra time. The other thing that they have is that these professional national associations have standards for education, for ethics, and standards of care that often exceed what the state of Wisconsin requires as a minimum. So they are saying to you, I am holding myself at a higher standard. And for almost all of them, I'm a member of the National Association of Home Inspectors. And you can go online, and in many cases, you'll actually find a web page for that particular inspector. And then, of course, interview. Mm-hmm. You may have an inspector who is very good on a new home, but you're looking at an 1870s farmhouse. You need to ask them what they're comfortable with and what they're capable of reporting.
Now, I'm wondering about continuing education, because I would think, I mean, things have changed so much, you know, in the way of home construction, even over the last 20 years, that you'd probably want somebody who's kept up.
That's right, Larry. And if they haven't kept up, they lose their registration.
Oh, okay.
The state of Wisconsin requires either 20 hours a year of certified courses, that is, courses that are approved by the Department of Safety and Professional Services, or 40 hours every 2 years. And you'll find many inspectors will actually exceed that, because we have new HVAC equipment, we have new types of water heaters. The state of Wisconsin has just implemented its third emergency rule on wall bracing, which is became a big problem in the 1980s with the growth of the McMansion.
Mm-hmm.
So it is incumbent upon inspectors to keep up their license by getting that education. Many inspectors, including our firm, is we have CVs. And if you say, John, I want to know what you've been up to, mm-hmm. I can give you a list of every course I've taken since 1999. And that list, Larry, is long.
Well, how much, you know, this is the other thing I'm sure it runs through everybody's mind. How much should I expect to pay for a home inspection?
Boy, that's a tough question. There are people out there who I think will do an inspection for you for $250. And to tell you the truth, Larry, I don't know what the charges are in northern Wisconsin or northwestern Wisconsin or in the Milwaukee area. We actually charge by the hour, but again, part of that is because we often get into very old houses and sometimes very large houses. My partner, Peter Oslin, and I often travel around the state. So we'll be in Sheboygan, Milwaukee, Manitowoc. Mm. Looking at very big, old houses. Most of my inspections run between $400 and $500. Mm-hmm. And I would say that we are more expensive than most home inspectors in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. And part of that is market-driven.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Well, if you want to find a qualified home inspector in your area, I know there's the Wisconsin Association of Home Inspectors. I know that because Judith put that association up on our Facebook page for people to go to.
Oh, that's true. I'm probably in trouble for not remembering to note them right away, but I am a member of that as well, and that is divided into various areas of the state, and they have monthly or bi-monthly meetings as well. And the Wisconsin Association of Home Inspectors also runs its own educational programs in the spring and the fall. And those are very good programs indeed. I've taken many of those courses.
Probably taught one or two.
I have not taught
any
of them.
Oh, you haven't?
No, I haven't.
I'm surprised. John Freiberger, our guest. We're going to go to Liz here in Stevens Point in just a minute. But there's a line open for you as well. Give us a call with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. And we'd certainly love to hear from you. And now let's turn to Liz in Stevens Point. Liz, thanks for waiting. Hi. Liz, are you there?
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. What's on your mind?
My name is Lynn, actually, and I live on the west side of Stevens Point.
Okay.
Okay, and I live in a house that was actually skidded across the river somewhere from the Iverson Neighbor Park neighborhood, if you're familiar with that at all. And I'm calling to find out about lead piping.
So this was skidded across just recently or a long time ago? Or
This was maybe, I'll say 60 years ago.
Okay. All right. So, yeah.
Something like that. A contractor who subcontracted for a contractor, instead of his boss would be wanting to raise these houses, he said, no, I'll take them. And then he salvaged what he could, and then he put a few of these small homes over on the west side of Point.
Mm-hmm.
And we're having some work done in our bathroom coming up here when it warms up. And I'm just wondering, how is there like a water test you could do to see if there's any lead?
Oh, for lead pipes. Sure.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Well, John, what about it?
Well, we've got two types of lead pipes that we need to differentiate. One is lead water services, because many of the cities use lead pipes for their the water mains that they brought to your house. Now, for that, you should be able to check with your local water utility. If you can find your water meter in the basement, and I'm sure you can look at it. You have a crawl space, so that means you've got to, somebody has to crawl in there, don't they? If it is a copper pipe, one can usually tell quite easily it's a copper pipe. One can just abrade it a little bit, and you'll see the shiny penny sort of look of the copper. If it is a dull gray and sort of a lumpy, something that looks like has a lot of mass to it, then you may still have a lead service coming into your house. Now, then there are also some older homes that had lead inside the house. Now, your house has been moved, so one of the telltale things we look for lead pipes is these very strange shutoff valves that were put in the basement floor. But we're not going to be able to look for that in your house because it's been moved.
Mm-hmm.
But lead pipes, if you see them, you're going to see them in the basement for the water supply, and they're a bit unusual because the brackets that support the lead pipe are actually molded with the pipe. The stuff came in coils, and it usually has about a 3-inch by 3-inch bracket that is screwed into a wall. And again, you're going to see that it is continuous. Where pieces were joined together, there's going to be like a big ball of lead solder.
Oh.
If things are screwed together, then you know that it's galvanized steel pipe, even though they're about the same color.
Okay.
Now, the third place where we find lead is in waistlines. But if it's in a waistline, well, who really cares? You're not drinking the water.
Yeah.
So you might find that you have an old closet bend that is the pipe coming out of your toilet, or you might find an old pipe coming out of your tub where the waste is lead, because the nice thing about it is you could heat it, you could twist it, you can make traps out of it. If you did have those pipes, I don't think I would worry about them too much. And if you're going to have
a treatment center, they deal with that kind of residue? A water treatment center, if it's...
What you're probably going to want to do is simply to remove the pipes if they exist. If your house is only 100 years old, most likely you do not have lead pipes. If your house is back from the 1870s, 1880s, there you're more likely to have lead pipes. But very, very few houses have lead pipes inside the houses. It's usually the lead water service coming from the street that people have to deal with.
Yeah, there you go. Well, good luck. I think that's a pretty clear way to tell whether or not you've got the lead pipes.
And I would expect, Larry, that if one goes online and searches lead pipe, one is going to get a couple of pictures because they really do look differently. The big thing is we have to remember that they aren't screwed together the way steel is, that they are basically soldered together.
Yeah, so if they're soldered together, they're lead.
Right, and if there are joints, then it's steel.
Thank you again, Liz, for calling. Appreciate your call. Visiting today with John Freiberger, Wisconsin registered home inspector and founder of Freiberger & Associates in Fitchburg, deals a lot, especially with older structures, does a lot of remodeling work as well in the state of Wisconsin. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer, on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, taking a look at your home and home inspections with John Freiberger of Freiberger & Associates Fitchburg. Questions for him, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org. You can also post on our Facebook page, and maybe you've got a photo about perhaps a problem area in your house. You have a photo, you can post that up on our Facebook page. John can take a look at it. Maybe we can come up with some help for you, or we, and he. Liz in Madison up next. Liz, hi. Thanks for calling. Liz, are you there?
Yes, I'm right here. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
I'm wondering if you have any general advice for sellers preparing to sell about situations that the seller really ought to address versus will cut the buyer a check at the closing. Specifically, we've got a roof that was supposed to be 30-year architectural shingles, and it's globe shingles that failed after less than 12 years. You know, do we just say, hey, you know, have a blast, get the roof you want, and cut them a check at the sale? Or do you think we must do that because they can't even get a loan to buy it if the roof looks this bad? Those sorts of things, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, your primary advisor is going to be your broker, but I can tell you what I see as far as people walking away. Mm-hmm. And I'm very sorry. I offer you my sympathy. I have just a shed with globe shingles on, but fortunately it is just a shed. And fortunately that company is out of business. But, Larry, these things fell apart in 5 and 6 years. It was really a problem. One of the big issues we find is not just that the roof it doesn't look good and needs to be replaced. But if we're getting any kind of leaking, condensation, flashing failures, those sorts of things where we're going to get fungal growth in the house, mold is one of those terrible scare words. So you're going to have to make sure that this thing does not leak and cause water damage before the before your sale is completed. There's probably a third. I mean, your one is to say, hey, it's a bad roof. That's disclosed on the condition report. Number two, we replace the roof and we say we have a brand new roof. Here's the warranty. Number three may be to call a reputable roofer and get a price.
Mm-hmm.
And sell it, you know, as is, but say, look, here's the price from Smith Roofing, and they will repair this entire roof for $5,600.
Mm-hmm.
But discuss that with your broker, but just make sure you are maintaining the integrity of the roof as far as a waterproof membrane, weatherproof membrane,
yes. Yes.
And that you know that is going to last during the period that you have the house up for sale.
Yep.
Got it.
All right.
Okay.
Good luck,
thanks
Liz.
Thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Ken in Arborvita, it's your turn. Hi, Ken.
Hi, Larry. Enjoy your show. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, I have vaulted ceilings in which I have, I guess, the regular light bulbs and incandescent light. And I'd like to change those to LEDs to cut down on the heat in that ceiling because my roof is a metal roof, but I don't have a lot of insulation up there, and I get some ice damming. And I can't find anything on the code for the, you know, state code. Is it so new that, or don't I know what I'm looking for?
What you're going to have to look at, Ken, is actually the National Electrical Code, because Wisconsin does not have its own electrical code. We rely upon the National Code. I have a copy of it in a very large book. I don't know whether that is available online or not. Now, if you're simply changing out bulbs, I can't see where that would be an issue, because LED bulbs are cool. But one of the concerns, Ken, how old is your house?
1973.
Okay. If my memory serves me correctly, in 1973, if these are recessed can boxes, they are airtight, nor are they what they call insulation contact. So in other words, they're holes in your ceiling, which is where the heat is going out. So I think what you really probably want to do is talk to an electrician, and what you want to be able to do is to get in the airtight boxes so we lose this air exfiltration. Of course, it's at your ceiling, so that's where the warmest air is going out at the highest pressure during the winter. Now, the other thing that uh, that we're that when Ken and I are on here and we're always talking about getting an energy analysis, my guess is if in the winter you did thermal imaging, you would be able to see through your metal roof exactly where those lights are.
Yeah.
Because you would have red spots. So I would really think about replacing those old the old recess cans with the modern ones, because then you know that you're safe.
Yeah.
Okay.
And all right, it's going to cost a few bucks, but you'll get some recovery back on that, on what you're saving on heat and also comfort.
Well, the other thing, Larry, is condensation.
Yes.
Because if we have a cathedral ceiling here, vaulted ceiling, as Ken said, we've got warm, moist air that is going out, and then with the insulation, it is collecting on the bottom side of his roof sheathing.
Oh.
So rather than end up having to tear up that nice metal roof and replace roof sheathing that's turned moldy, let's have an electrician come in and replace those boxes with good ones.
All the more reason. Good luck, Ken. Thank you so much for calling. Gary in Madison up next. Hi, Gary. Thank you for calling.
Oh, thanks for taking my call. My daughter was purchasing a house, and the inspector went through and here in Madison said something was wrong with the electrical box. And it's the same brand that we've had in our house forever, Federal. And she called the city of Madison, and the city of Madison building inspection said, we get calls about this box all the time, and there's nothing, absolutely nothing wrong with it. She went on the internet, and there was all sorts of conflicting things. Well, by the time it was all over, somebody else had come in and bought the house out from under her.
Yeah.
So she lost that house all because of this inspector's apparently lack of knowledge and being very picky about something that didn't matter, make any difference at all.
Well, yes and no. If this is a Federal Pacific stab lock box, which is different than a Federal box, those boxes are considered to be hazardous. And the industry standard for home inspectors, Gary, is to call them out as being replaced. Now, 15, 20 years ago, we were suggesting that they be inspected by an electrician. But what we have found since then is that the breakers do not trip when overloaded. So if this is the Federal Pacific stab lock box, and it says stab lock inside, and usually has sort of an orangish-red circuit breaker, the standard for the industry and certainly for that inspector would be to call that out as something that needed replacing.
Okay.
So that could well have been the situation then.
It could well have been. It's one of these things where the inspector may have taken a photo of it, and sometimes simply by looking at the photo, you can see the word stab lock. Usually there's a little adjustment screw, and the stab lock was written in a half arc above that screw. But we have been dealing with these panels for about 20 years. We have to remember that, Gary, that one of the jobs of the home inspector is really to protect the buyer. If they are going to err, they need to err on the side of caution. And so it's really, a home inspector is not your insurance policy, but the home inspectors are told by their associations, by their attorneys, by their insurance carriers, always be very careful with what you say. You don't want to end up with a buyer with buyer's remorse saying, why did you let that Federal Pacific panel slip by? Now I'm spending $1,700 replacing it.
Yeah. So there you go. Thank you very much for calling. I appreciate your call. And Mary in Brandon, it's your turn next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi. Yeah, we have a 10-year-old home, and about 3 years ago, when we had that really bad winter, there's at the bottom, it's a poured foundation, and then it's got like foam insulation, I don't know what it is, and then it's stuccoed over that, so it looks like it's stuccoed. Well, they chewed in that, so there's all these polka dots about an inch in diameter, where they also girdled many of the shrubs and other things, but there's all these inch diameter holes, doesn't go all the way through, but these chunks out of the insulation. What do we do with that? How do we have to rip, and how do you even rip it all off? I mean, it's really glued on there.
It's probably not only glued on there, but there's probably mechanical fasteners that go into the concrete as well, because usually if that foundation insulation has not slipped down the wall, if it's tight, then it was very well fastened. But you should be able to infill this. And what I would suggest you take a look at is recoating the exterior. But this time, make sure that there's actually a fiberglass mesh. And there's three different levels of fiberglass mesh. You want the structural one, the fairly strong mesh. So that would be put over with a base coat, and then they would brush another coat over. And dig down a few inches into the soil, probably at least 6 inches into dirt, so that the mice and voles can't easily get in there again. With that thicker coating, they're going to break their little teeth before they come back and bother you again. And that coating is very important. Number one, that probably is extruded polystyrene insulation. That is going to break down in sunlight. And number two, if you get the mice tunneling through that, the mice can tunnel right up into your house, and then you've got mice and voles running around inside where we don't want them.
It's like they took chunks out of it. It doesn't go underneath. It's from the top surface. It's like they bit into it.
I'm surprised that they didn't tunnel in, because we do see them. We do see them tunneling in, and we also see ants tunneling into it. So a good exterior coating is what you're really looking at.
What is that called? What am I buying?
Well, basically, you're just looking at a foundation coating. It could be called exterior insulation finish system. That would be the most expensive sort. But I would talk to a couple of basement specialists, because you'll find many of the people that do basement waterproofing also coat foundation. So look them up. They're usually the lowest cost and some of the most experienced people to do it. Right, the people who put in the drain tile. Mm-hmm. Many of them are franchises, and many of them are well-trained. And that's usually the least expensive way of having it repaired for you.
There you go.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Mary. Thank you for calling. You can join in, too, by the way. We have open lines. Get you on pretty quickly at 1-800-642-1234. Email us as well at talk@WPR.org, or you can post on our Facebook page. Go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page for that. Let's go to Barbara in Milwaukee next. Barbara, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I purchased a house a couple years ago, and the inspector did not find, to my dismay, when I touched the chimney in the basement, it just crumbled. I noticed the paint like had a little hole in it, and there was sand coming out, and they had a table in front of it, and when I moved the table is when I saw this, and the chimney is just turning to sand.
Oh, boy.
Oh, yes. Well, we see this a lot. Especially, is this a chimney that that has a fireplace, Barbara?
No, it does not have a fireplace. It's just for the furnaces.
Just for the furnace. Okay. Well, what's happened is you've developed some acids and some condensation, and that's worked its way through these bricks in the basement. The brick may be what's called a sand-lime brick, which was really not a clay brick. It was actually literally sand and lime. It was baked in a steam room. These are often used as inexpensive bricks in the basement at the bottom of the chimney. And these can really be repaired quite easily. You have a lot of support there. So even though some of the bricks look terrible and are crumbling, these can be refaced. Now, what is currently hooked up to that chimney?
Just the furnaces.
Well, the other thing to think about long term, and we're getting back into energy again, as we always do when we're with Larry, because he likes energy, is at some point you're going to have a side-vented furnace, and you're probably going to have a side-vented water heater, because the old atmospherically...
Oh, yeah, I have water heaters, too. Yeah.
Okay. So at some point, you're going to have nothing connected to that chimney. The chimney is going to continue to deteriorate as long as you have things connected to it that will cause acidic condensation. You may want to just say, hey, I'm not going to worry about it. And when I am done with my old furnace and old water heater and have really modern side-vented equipment in, I'm going to abandon the chimney, or maybe even if the chimney's in the middle of your house, maybe you'll want to simply remove it, which is actually fairly easy to do.
Yeah. I have lots of friends who have done that, and it makes quite a difference in the house, actually.
Indeed it does, Larry. On these old chimneys, I'm sort of assuming Barbara has an older house.
Yes, it's 1920.
Yes, okay. So what you probably have, Barbara, is you probably have an inch or two hole that goes all the way around your chimney from the basement to the attic, because they didn't want to put the wood framing right next to the chimney, because if the chimney got hot. So what you have is all winter long, the warm air from the basement is going up into your attic along that chase. You also may have a two-story house without any air conditioning returns on the second floor, Well, uh-huh. if the old chimney was gone, you can get that laundry chute you always wanted, plus the high returns to the second floor. So this old chimney area is maybe an asset you'd like to recover. Once it's down and you patch the hole on the roof, you never have to worry about flashing again. You lower your maintenance, you lower your heating costs. And
wow, so it might be a blessing in disguise.
Indeed it is. And you could certainly talk to an HVAC contractor and talk to a general contractor, even a handyman, about removing these chimneys. These old chimneys, when they're in this condition, you can almost take them apart without the use of a hammer. They are basically turning into stacked brick. So look at it as an opportunity. When I'm doing a home inspection for people, I always say to them, Larry, we're inspecting this house, and I want you to figure out everything you're doing in the next 5 years so you do it in the right order, and how does one thing affect another? And then Larry says, well, the roof needs to be repaired X year. I'm putting a new furnace X year. I want to remove the chimney. How do we work all those things together? So maybe talk to your local contractor, a heating contractor, or a general contractor, and come up with a plan to get rid of that chimney.
Sounds like a plan.
Thank you.
Thanks, Barb. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. And I think that's a good one, that a question and answer that a lot of people can use. Marcy in Stoughton up next. Hi, Marcy.
Hi there. I've got what I think is sort of a chicken and egg question. We live in a ranch home, and we do occasionally have issues with water in our basement, typically when the ground is still frozen and it rains. And we're trying to figure out where do we start? Do we look at rain gutters? Do we look at the grating outside of our house? There are some cracks that we can see in our wall that before we purchased it, it looked like there was some patching done to it. There also is what I believe is a sump pump pit, but there's no sump pump there. So my question is, where do we start?
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, without seeing the house, every house really needs gutters. You want to get that water directed away from the house, especially if you have a flat lot in a flat neighborhood. You want to get the water as far away from the house as possible so it is not flooding into the soil. What's happening in the winter is because you have a house without foundation insulation, you have an area of maybe 6 inches outside your house where the ground is not frozen. So when the water hits that area, it can't go in the rest of your yard because it's frozen solid. So it all comes in next to your house. So we want to get the gutters depositing that water far enough from the house, and then we want to get the drainage fixed so that water can't run back against the foundation. If you're building a new house, what the code requires is that you have a half inch of pitch for the first 10 feet around the house, which is basically 5 inches of pitch for 10 feet. So look at 10 feet out from your house. Maybe you're going to have to put in some window wells. Maybe you have to do some other things. But get enough grading so you move the soil away. But remember that we don't want soil within 6 inches of wood siding or the unprotected framing of your house. So sometimes you're a little bit constrained about what you can do.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the sump pit, does it get water in it?
It does.
Okay, well, then you definitely do need a sump pump. Because someday that may save your basement from a real flooding. Remember that a sump pump needs to have a circuit that it is on. It can't be run on an extension cord, so you may have to have an electrician come in and then get a sump pump and make sure it's a type of pump that will lower the water level to below where the drain tile come into the sump pit, because there are some pumps that are rather tall, and we end up with the drain tile being full of water.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
And what is your recommendation in terms of... I know there's a range of quality of some pumps, and some have alarms and some don't. I mean, what is sufficient to do the job but not necessarily the Cadillac version?
I can't remember the brand name, but there's an American-made sump pump that has a 5-year warranty on it. And I have an old stone house with a damp basement in a sandy soil. And there are years when I rely upon my sump pump. I wish I could remember the name of them, but they are available in most hardware stores. And but look for U.S.-made 5-year warranty. You, of course, save the box. Put a copy of the receipt on the box, so if it ever does fail, you can go back and get a new one.
There you go.
Sounds great. All right, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. We have Thomas in Madison next. Hi, Thomas. Thanks for calling.
Hi, great show, so guys. I have foundation, 1992 house. the problem is it's settled right next to the foundation, is exposing the blue insulation and some of the foundation brick. I want to put new dirt in there, but should I put something underneath the dirt so that the water otherwise, what preparation should I employ before I put the dirt on there?
So 1992 house, and you do have the foam exterior insulation, is that correct?
Yeah, the blue, it's showing because it's settled, right?
Right, so, right. Yeah. All right, and you have a sump pump in the basement?
Yes.
Okay.
No problem with water.
Good, wonderful. So the blue insulation may be grooved on the back, and it may actually be a drainage board insulation. If that is the case, then it sounds like you've got a pretty good weather-resistant basement system there. So in that case, I think you're simply filling with black dirt or whatever you want to put
okay.
in for those.
No gravel required.
No, I don't believe so. If you're not having a problem, if you didn't have the insulation, we might talk about doing some insulation. If you had water problems, we might talk about doing some bentonite. But it sounds like you have a really easy repair on your hands.
Great. One more real quick question. Removing ivy on the front on a painted surface has left the suction cups, if you will, and dried to the paint. Is there any way to remove those?
Once you figure that out, let me know, because I'm dealing with Virginia creeper at my own house. I'm finding sandpaper seems to be at...
Right, elbow grease.
Yeah.
Right.
Thanks.
Thanks very much for calling. Visiting today with John Freiberger, Wisconsin registered home inspector, specializes in evaluating older structures, founder of Freiberger and Associates in Fitchburg. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio as we take a look at your home. What kind of shape's it in? We'll talk about that. If you have some problems or issues you want to bring up with our guest today, you can certainly do that. We can definitely talk home inspection, because our guest, John Freiberger, is a Wisconsin registered home inspector. He specializes in evaluating older structures. He is the founder of Freiberger and Associates, located in Fitchburg, Wisconsin. Been a guest on this show for a long, long time. Always has great answers, and we always have great conversation with him. The numbers to call, 800-642-1234. Every one of our lines is filled at the moment, so let's go to Peter next in Madison. Peter, hi, thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. Appreciate it. Mm-hmm. So I have a house built 1920s on the west side of Madison here near west. And we had a couple of kids here, so we were busy with that. But they're getting older, and things are cropping up. Like I think the roof is almost at the end of its life, and I discovered some nasty moisture issues in the attic. And I'm kind of at the loss of what to do. Like, what is the most important thing to get after? And I was wondering if it's something that I could profit by getting an inspection and just have somebody point things that I need to do. Because I'm a do-it-yourselfer, but I'm kind of at a loss.
Yep.
What do you think?
I think that you need two inspectors.
Two? Okay.
Yes, two inspectors. We always, on this program, we're always talking about the need to have a really good energy review of your house. So
right.
You're in a 1920s house, so it may be extremely leaky. It may be very poorly insulated. So I would probably go to Focus on Energy and mm-hmm. select somebody who can do an energy review of the house, because that will give you an idea of what you can do to really lower the utility bills on this 1920 house and to get it more to conform with the kind of heat losses and gains and energy uses we have in modern houses. The
okay.
second thing is, yes, indeed, you could call a home inspector, especially one who knows 1920 houses.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked earlier about this 5-year plan,
mm-hmm.
is make a
yep.
list of everything that needs to be done. And then we have this conversation with the lady about possibly removing her chimney. You know, we were combining really maintenance and energy
mm-hmm.
in that conversation. So I think you can do the same thing, is make a list of all the elements that you really want to get taken care of in the next 5 years,
mm-hmm.
take a look at what the paybacks are on that, and then talk to, if you need it, a good general contractor or a handyman, and go ahead and buff and polish that. You're very fortunate if you own a 1920s house on the near west side of Madison.
Yeah. You sure are.
They're probably reassessing and raising its value monthly.
Tell me about it.
So there you go, Peter. I hope that helps.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Yeah, there's the different parts of the state are under different conditions in terms of values of homes these days, and Madison is one of those areas, as John just pointed out, where the home values are let's say, going up rapidly.
They're galloping.
They're galloping. All right, Frank and Weyerhaeuser, it's your turn. Hi, Frank.
Hello, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm calling because I have a 1930s prairie-style home, brick, and it has a recent roof. We just purchased it, so it has a recently new roof on it, but it has a basement that is this exact same size as the upstairs, and it's about half in, half out of the ground, the basement is. And when I took all the old paneling and all the old ceilings out of the basement, I found that it's all concrete block, and so it's a very solid house. But I'm curious, on the outer edges of the on the walls of the foundation, I'm getting some water damage, or water, old paint that was on there is peeling off. There's actually a little mold I'm going to have to take care of. Is there a way I can waterproof my basement and then paint it? I just want to paint the walls, simply. So I'm just curious if there's recommendations for how you would waterproof a block basement.
Well, I think, Frank, what you really need to look at first is gutters, downspout, and drainage, because you want to get that water away from the house. Your concrete masonry unit, or CMU foundation, is basically, it's like a hollow sponge, really. If water gets next to it, it is going to come through it. It's a very permeable form of concrete. You really cannot waterproof from the interior. I know they sell all kinds of paints and things that say that you can, but they do not work. You have to have the waterproof membrane on the side where the pressure is pushing it against the block, not where pressure is pushing it away. If this is fairly shallow, you could actually excavate around the house and put a peel-and-stick membrane, and you could put a drain tile around the house. On a house like that, it's probably going to run $30 to $40 per lineal foot. You could talk to one of your local water contractors about doing that. That would be important if you're thinking of finishing this basement and you really wanted it dry. So if you're thinking that maybe that's going to have a family room down there or something, then it might be worth it to actually waterproof on the exterior. Otherwise, I think gutters and drainage, if you do paint the interior, use a silicate-based paint because mold doesn't grow on it. A thorough seal is one. Kiln is another. And they should be available at your local masonry supplier.
Okay.
But you need to get the water away from the house.
That is correct. Because it is going to continue to come in no matter what you do on the interior.
Yep.
Okay, so mainly, as you say, it has a new roof, so I'm assuming I'll have to redirect the gutters, I'm imagining.
Or lengthen them sometimes.
Lengthen the downspout extension so you get that water away from the house. And sometimes people actually have to... Many of these houses were built with little swales and things when they were first constructed, but they get filled in, somebody changes the garden, the drainage becomes lousy. So really take a look at the drainage around your house.
Very good. Well, actually, I think the man had a fish pond right by the house.
Ah.
I think we're going to fill that in. Thank you for your time. I appreciate it, and I'll take some of those measures into account.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. I appreciate your call. I can remember... One spot on my house, I added 4 feet is all. I've added an extra 4 feet of downspout, and that took care of it.
It certainly can. We often think about a 45-degree angle. So if you have a 8-foot-deep basement, that extension's got to go out a long way. Frank maybe only had a 4-foot-deep basement, but still, you need to get that water away so that it goes into the soil and not doesn't intercept that basement wall.
Orville in Melrose, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
Well, thanks for taking my call. My son is purchasing his first home. I live in Wisconsin. He lives in Winona, just across the border. We were struggling. He's limited amount of money, but we found a home we really like. It's very old, and it had a crack in one of the foundations, but the older lady that had it takes well care of it, and now we have to get an inspection. We have the seller has a lawyer, and we've hired a lawyer, and we have to do an inspection. I'm wondering if that's going to kill the bank if the inspection comes in, they see that crack, everything looks good downstairs. I do not see a problem. It has like a, you know, like an old cellar with these 16-inch walls, and then whoever had it put concrete block footers around it later to extend the house out, and looks like very well taken care of, but has these goofy things like that going on. I wonder if that's going to hurt us. We've already negotiated a lower price.
Okay.
Well, generally, I really don't want to give legal advice here, but fortunately you have a lawyer. But usually your price for this house is based upon certain assumptions you're making. So if you have an inspection and the inspector finds there's a major structural issue, well, then your initial assumptions were incorrect, and also the disclosures on the house were incorrect. So therefore, you would expect that you would be able to renegotiate that. So certainly do have, make sure you have a knowledgeable inspector. A lot of inspectors know not a lot about stone walls. So interview them, say, are you comfortable with old houses? Have you seen this before? One possibility on this house is that the house once had a crawl space and they actually deepened the basement as well. And that can have different issues. Mm-hmm. So really be careful shopping for your inspector. But don't worry about what they're going to find, Orville. They are there to protect you. And it's certainly better to get the bad news before you buy the house than after you buy the house.
Yeah.
We kind of figured that into the price. We looked at a lot of houses that were just nasty, bad, and this one just struck us as this. And I'm a homeowner myself. I looked at everything. I looked downstairs. They'd poured the basement down there, and they have a new furnace. And the lady had passed away, and her son is just trying to sell the home. And he is aware of everything that's wrong because mm-hmm. when we talked to him, we brought it up. And he said, well, that's the price. And, of course, the realtors are circling like vultures. They want to sell the home because they know that they can get a lot more money for it, and we didn't want to wait on it anymore, right. So we put an offer to buy in for it.
Well, it's nice that you've got it locked down with an offer to buy, but get your inspector in there and look at it just to make sure that you can remain comfortable with this deal.
Yeah, and thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. We have Steve in New Richmond, I believe, up next. Hi.
Hi.
Thanks
can
for
you hear me?
Yes, what's on your mind?
Okay, well, I'm purchasing a house in the next couple months here. The house was built in 2008, and my realtor and actually mortgage broker are recommending that I do not get a home inspection and that I rather get the insurance that's out there for homeowners to cover anything that would go bad, and I wanted to get your opinion on that.
Well, your insurance, Steve, unless it's an unusual policy, is good for 1 year. And it may not cover significant structural issues, condensation, mold issues, other things that may develop a little bit later. In that case, what you're going to be doing is you're going to be looking back at your real estate broker as the person who misled you. And I'm actually a member of the Wisconsin Realtors Association, and I read the magazine and the legal columns religiously. I find it unusual that a real estate broker would not want a home to be inspected, because it is not only an insurance policy for you, but it really does help the broker, because the inspector generally does know more than the broker. I mean, there's some brokers who are extremely smart. So I hate to just sound like I'm plugging for my industry, but certainly, were you my cousin, I would say no, hire an inspector and go through that, because the insurance is only for 1 year.
Sure. That's kind of what I thought, but I just wanted to get your opinion on it and see what you thought of that.
Yeah. You know, for a few $100, maybe up to $500 for a home inspection.
Well, that's what we think about, Larry, is we have people buying. For most people, this is the largest purchase they're going to make in their life.
Yeah.
And to save a few $100 and then end up with many, many, many years of regret just isn't worth it.
Here's an email from Jamie in Cedarburg. My husband and I are in the process of purchasing our first home. We had a radon test done in the basement. We'd like to use that basement as a rec room in the future. The radon came back higher than the suggested measurement of four units, but it was raining very hard at the time. Our home inspector used the charcoal filter test. Our question is, if our radon test came back at an average of 4.5 units, should we have reason for concern, or might it have been just the weather?
You have reason for concern. One thing we also have to remember, Larry, is that in the United States, we consider 3.9 to be safe. In Europe, it's 2.5. So if we're at 4.5, we're almost double the European level. Now, it is true that a snapshot 24 or 48-hour radon test is not giving you something that's statistically significant. But my recommendation is to make sure that you act upon it. Now, that action, you should probably talk about getting a radon mitigation system put in. Usually that runs about $1,000. If there's an existing sump pit, sometimes it's even less than that. But radon is nothing to fool with. It is right now our second leading cause of lung cancer in the U.S., and I think fairly shortly is going to be our leading cause. So take radon seriously. Yes, there certainly are statistical issues with the tests. Another test may come in differently, but if you're at 4.5, I'm sure that your average is not going to be below 2.5, which is where you really want it if you're going to have your children and family enjoying a room down there.
No, so...
Action is required.
Action is required. Is it ever... Cynthia wondering if it's ever worth it for the homeowner to have an inspection done prior to listing the house to sell.
Yes and no. You and your broker, when you're listing your house, have to fill in this real estate condition report. Now, if you don't know about something, you are not morally or legally obligated. I have had several situations, especially where there are estates, where people have called me and said, John, we want you to inspect this house. And I go, I will be happy to do it, but call your attorney first. They call back and they say, thank you, we're not hiring you. So part of it depends upon your market.
And we'll talk some more about that. John Freiberger, our guest, we'll take a quick look at the news, weather, and then we will be back with John. You stay with us. Well, it can really be stressful when you're looking to fix something in your home. You don't have the time or maybe the money to take care of it. Sometimes letting it go, though, can end up costing you a whole lot more money in the long run. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. John Freiberger of Freiberger & Associates, our guest today. He is a Wisconsin-registered home inspector, specializes in evaluating older structures, does a lot of remodeling work, especially on older structures. Always great to have him with us. He's been on this show for a long, long time now. John, great to have you back. Thank you so much.
Glad to be here, Larry.
We are taking your questions. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And just before our news break, Cynthia, we had an email from Cynthia who wondered if it's ever worth it for the home and owner to have an inspection done prior to selling the home. And, you know, you started to make some comments. They have a 1906 home that does need a fair amount of updating, and they're deciding whether they want to put the effort in or sell as is. Would that be just a waste of money, as a potential buyer would perhaps not trust it and want to do something different anyway?
Well, the last part of Cindy's question is really important, Larry. Would the buyer trust Cindy's home inspector? Well, the buyer should not. In fact, the ethics are that if I did this pre-inspection for Cindy, I would state that she is not to give that to the buyer. We want the buyer to hire their own inspector who is working for them, who is their interests at heart. It's their job to protect them. If Cynthia has this 1906 house pre-inspected, she could say, let's have an inspector come in and see if there's any big red flag. Something's going to kill the deal. But do not say that you are pre-inspecting and that the buyer is to rely upon your inspection. There is just a whole bunch of ethical and legal issues involved with that.
And, you know, I don't think I've ever told this story before on the air. I may have told it, but an acquaintance... A brother had a home on a lake and decided to do his own work to fix it up before they sold it. And so he spent a year putting in a new kitchen and doing some other work. They put it up for the market. They sold it in a week. And then shortly thereafter, they were at their other place. He said, oh, let's drive by the old place. And they went by the old place, and it was flat.
Especially on the lake.
I spent all that time, he said, fixing that house up, and then they just came in and knocked it down and put up a big one.
That's a really good point. A lot of people, Larry, try to guess, or the realtors tell them, what should be invested in a house. And very often the buyer is going to have a totally different idea than they have.
Oh, he had blisters on his blisters. Arlene in New Berlin, your turn. Hi, Arlene. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. I greatly appreciate it. First, I'll say that I've already had a home inspection, and the issue that I have, I don't think was there. What it is there's a main pipe that comes out of the floor that must go to the sewer system when you're draining water from your, say, the kitchen sink. It goes into that round stack, and then it goes out to the sewer. There's a real tiny, and I tried to get a flashlight to look at it, hole that is emitting a little brown liquid. Do I need to call a plumber in, or who do I need to call? And I'll take my answer off the air.
All right, very good. I think that's a pretty simple one. If the brown stuff is coming out at a joint, what that is a material that was put on the oakum before the lead was poured around it. And typically that will ooze out for years and has no meaning whatsoever. If this is not at a joint and is actually elsewhere on the pipe and there is actually a blister in the cast iron, then we may have the beginning of cast iron failure, because cast iron doesn't live forever. So just to repeat, if it's on the joint, don't worry about it. If it's someplace else, you may want to have a plumber come in and look at it. There's a patch that can be put over that very easily.
Here on Facebook, we got a photo for you to look at, John, and this is from Dave, and he said, I need an opinion on the corner of my basement in Rothschild, Wisconsin. I owned the house almost 2 years. It appears to have been patched in this one spot many times, and he has a photo of it, and indeed it does look that way. A sump pump is below this corner, and a downspout is working properly on the exterior above this area. The pump is operating every day. Should I be worried with these blocks that they may be collapsing, for example?
Well, they're not going to collapse, but Larry, looking at that picture and seeing the efflorescence, it would appear that that downspout is depositing water too close to the house, and that downspout water is actually running into the basement. Now, what happens in the fall when we have these wet soils and that soil freezes, and we have tremendous ice pressure pushing against these concrete block walls, can really damage them. So I think the first thing Dave needs to repeat what we've said to a couple of other people, is to take a look at the downspout extension and take a look at the grading around the house, because that is really the only approach that we're going to have that is going to really take care of that. Now, if that works for 6 months or so, and then Dave goes ahead and patches these blocks and repaints it, I would suggest he take digital photos of it with dates on it. So if he sells the house in 5 years, he can say, look, I patched this and fixed this 5 years ago. Here's the photos. Looks just like that today.
Excellent. Excellent advice. Betty in Madison up next with a question. Hi, Betty. Thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you. We are wanting to put a deck on the upper story, and below is a patio, and which has no cracks and hasn't lifted or anything like that. And what we wanted to do was, and hopefully we don't have to dig below the frost line because the patio doesn't move. And we wanted to put those cement, I don't know what they're called, cement blocks. They're probably about 12 by 12 at the base, and then they narrow up and they hold the post for the, for the deck. Mm-hmm. Will that work?
No, it won't. The city will not give you a permit for it.
Okay.
Now, what you're probably going to end up doing, if this patio is a thickened slab, which it probably isn't, you might be able to have an engineer work out something, but...
How thick is a thickened slab?
Well, generally on the outside, it's 15 inches and it has steel rebar in it.
I doubt that it is.
I doubt whether it is, too. But if you talk to a good contractor, what they're going to do, Betty, is they're going to just cut maybe a 16-inch or 18-inch square hole where you need to put down these footings. They'll hand-dig it down to the frost level. They will calculate the load of how big this footing has to be at the bottom, and they will then patch the patio around it with a slip joint in case the patio ever moves. It won't affect the footing. So you're going to need to have an architect or an engineer or at least a knowledgeable contractor detail something. Now, remember, you're in the city of Madison, so you need a permit for this. So these plans will have to be reviewed by the Building Inspection Department in Madison. So speak to a professional, be it a contractor, architect, or an engineer, to make sure that what you have passes muster with the city building inspectors.
Yeah.
Okay.
Betty, I believe that the city of Madison has a pamphlet available there in the basement of the municipal building that talks about decks, because they get so many questions. You might just call the main number at Building Inspection, see if they have that, and then stop down and pick it up. And it is, if I remember the pamphlet correctly, there's a lot of information in it.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. You definitely want to do things right.
That is correct.
You're going to be very sad. You could be wind up being very sad if you don't. Barb in Manitowoc, your turn. Hi, Barb. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I have a son that just took a week course in home inspection, and he wants to get started in the business.
Yep.
So I was wondering if you have any advice for him.
The number one advice is to have a good insurance broker. You certainly want to start out with new with errors and omissions insurance, because I can pretty much guarantee you're going to make them. The second is to develop a lot of humility. The really smart inspectors in Madison spend a lot of time calling in other inspectors or calling in engineers. They don't guess. So if they look at like concrete foundation like Dave's, and if they're not sure whether it's moving or not, not sure whether it's sound or not, they're going to put in the report, further investigation needed. Speak to a foundation specialist or an engineer. So don't take any chances. Starting out in a business like this has a certain amount of risk, and you really need to think about risk reduction so you don't end up getting yourself in a lot of hot water. The third thing I would say is find the oldest, most knowledgeable inspector in the area and shadow him, especially if you get into things like old houses. I mean, I've taken a lot of home inspection courses, and the number of things like balloon framing that have not been adequately covered are legion. So spend 100 hours with an elderly gentleman or an older lady who's been doing this for years, and wander around with them and learn what they're doing.
I guess very good advice.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, Barb, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Janet in Sauk Prairie, your turn. Hi, Janet.
Hi. I just have a question about what makes a bedroom legal in basements. I was recently at an open house where there were two bedrooms in the basement, and they didn't have any windows of any kind.
That is not a bedroom.
Right, that's what I said, and I said something to the realtor, and she said, oh, the appraiser said those were legal bedrooms. And so, because I couldn't figure it out either, but that's what I thought. If they don't have egress windows of some kind or open to the outdoors, they were not legal bedrooms.
Well, it's not necessarily egress windows, but every bedroom has to have an area of glass that is equal to 8% of the floor space of the bedroom. So a 100 square foot bedroom needs to have a 4 by 2 window, and 50% of that has to be openable. Now, egress, if there are two stairways, you don't need an egress window. If there's only one stairway, then you do need an egress window, and that is defined in the Uniform Dwelling Code. I'm very surprised that the broker would say, based upon an appraiser, that these are bedrooms, because she is liable. If you bought that place and had the inspector say they weren't bedrooms, you might find the broker spending a lot of money cutting in egress windows for you.
Well, and they're not possible to have egress windows, because what's behind them is actually a garage area.
Ah.
And, so I was like, these can't be bedrooms.
No.
You are correct, and evidently you know more than that particular broker, who needs to read her or his Wisconsin Realtors Association magazine more closely.
I can tell you one little story, quick story, Janet. I have a three-story house, and the third story was where my daughter's bedroom takes up the whole third story. And we had to put in a skylight because there wasn't enough window. I mean, there were a couple of windows, but not enough to make the 8%. So we had to put a skylight in to add more light. So,
okay. Yeah, and there's no natural light in these rooms at all.
Boom.
Nothing.
Yeah.
Anyway, all right, you've answered my question. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Stephanie in New Berlin. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, I have a question about my attic.
Okay.
We had a vent of the vent that runs the length of the peak of the attic put in when we had our new roof. And I noticed that we had frost on the roof deck, not this past winter, but the winter before. I forgot to check this winter. So I know there's a proper ratio. Is there a test that a roofer can do to determine if we have the proper venting?
Yes, there is a proper ratio, and that is defined by the Wisconsin Uniform Dwelling Code. It's basically you need a net square foot of opening for each 300 foot of house. And you have to have, well, now they're just changing the code, so I hope I'm not going to misquote here. But the old code said that we need to have as much soffit vent as ridge vent. The issue that we have if we add a lot of ridge vent to a house and don't have soffit vent is that air is going to leave the attic, and where is the air going to come from? Well, if it sucks it up from the house in the middle of winter, that's warm, wet air, and then you're going to end up with frost. So I think what you'd want to do is take a look at the soffit venting and see how much you have. My advice is there's no such thing as too much soffit venting. We're finding some real changes when we insulate attics even, and we're finding that we need to vent more than the 300 feet that is noted in the code, or we end up with frost issues. So it is fairly complicated. I believe that Larry's website probably has the CoreEvent.com website link.
Yes, I believe we do.
CoreEvent, that's a good consumer-friendly website that talks about roof venting. But you might actually have to have, if the roofer can't get this figured out for you, then call a home inspector who is familiar with venting and the Uniform Dwelling Code and have him come in and specify. You could also spend the money on an architect, but so many of them are so busy right now, you can't get them.
Yeah. Thank you very much for calling. I appreciate your call. And we have Bill wondering about the lifespan of water heaters. Do they regularly last more than 15 years, and should an owner replace it before it breaks down or just wait till the inevitable?
Well, I once inspected the home of an elderly gentleman who had passed away, and his water heater is 55 years old. Every week he drained the lime out of the bottom of the water heater, Larry.
Oh, so my gosh.
They can go that long, but that elderly and late gentleman is the only one I've known who's ever done it. What they tell us in our education classes is to say that most water heaters go 10 to 15 years. Again, we really want to think about energy inspection along with building inspection when we're thinking about things like water heaters. The water heaters that are currently in Wisconsin, many of them are going to be illegal to install or sell next year. Current stocks can be gotten rid of, but we are having major national changes, as we had some years ago with air conditioning condensing units. Many of us have terrible old water heaters in our basement. And I think the first thing to take a look at is how much energy am I going to save by putting in a new water heater?
Yeah, it could be considerable. We have a Facebook question from Judy. We recently bought a home, had an inspection, which the inspector noted many things that needed correcting. We had early occupancy of the house. Our broker told of the small items that the seller was willing to fix, but said we shouldn't demand the main corrections be done or the seller might not extend early occupancy, which became needed due to some other contingencies. Major items fell on us to correct, which we are still dealing with. We feel that our $400 inspection was a waste of money because of the broker. Was our broker compliant with his actions?
Well, oh. It sounds like for the $400, they got a long list of issues with the house.
Yeah, it doesn't look like it was the house inspector that was a problem.
It looks like this was tough negotiations in a tough market, and we were talking before the program how tough and tight the market is in real estate. So it could be that both of the professionals involved in this did the best they could in a difficult situation. And we all know people now who have missed out on buying 3, 4, and 5 homes, even though they've offered more than the listing price. So
yeah,
I don't want to be too hard on anybody in this current market.
Yeah, especially the Madison market right now is just unbelievably competitive, let's put it that way.
It is.
Dan in Muskego, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi, Larry. My question is, and thank you for taking my call. I'm debating on putting in this. We have very heavy water out here in Muskego, where there's especially my home, where there's heavy concentration of rust and minerals that build up around the spigots that when you want to turn off your water to your sink. And I saw this product. It was, I saw it at Home Depot, and I've also seen it. My wife brought it up on the internet. It's Scale Blaster, which is like a, I don't know, some kind of a metal deal that you wrap around your pipes, especially the cold, I guess, and the hot coming from the hot, or going to the, coming out of the hot water heater. And I'm just wondering how effective are they as far as they say it should reduce the chemicals built up inside the pipes. You apparently with this device, you don't need to have a water softener, which I do have one. I just put in a couple months ago. But I'm, you know, I don't know if you're familiar with it. The product's sold at Home Depot, and it's called Scale Blaster.
Scale Blaster. I have heard of it. Dan, how old is your house there in Muskego?
I want to say I think it was built in the early 50s. It's okay. Got all pipe. The piping is all copper tubing.
It is,
and
it
I
is
know
all
once. Yes, mm-hmm. And I know once before. I mean, I do have well water, and I know shortly after we moved in, the water pressure was horrible, and you know, and I thought, okay, maybe the tank needed. I called in a plumber, and he said, chances are your pipes are, you know, filled up with.
With stuff.
Yes. Well, typically in houses now, or at least since the 1960s, 1970s, we soften the hot water, but we don't soften the cold water. Now, we get into older houses where we had soft cold running to things like the stools and the tubs, but we never run soft water to sinks because of the salt content. We don't want to be drinking that salt content. Now, it's possible that in the 50s, especially in the early 50s, we see a lot of houses with what is now considered to be undersized copper pipe, and especially if it's copper tubing, is we will see 3/8-inch copper tubing where we really want 1/2-inch or even 3/4-inch pipe. So it could be that Dan's issue is really with undersized copper that was put in that particular period.
Yeah.
The problem with the Scale Blaster is basically what you're doing is you're trying to knock loose calcium carbonate from the inside of the pipes. Well, it's got to go someplace.
Yeah.
Well, where does it go? Well, it goes into the aerators in your faucets, so the faucets don't work, and it goes into the valves on your shower, so the shower valves don't work. So I'm a little bit dubious. I think that what Dan should probably do is consult with a local plumber and see if maybe we actually need to do some plumbing work. In this modern day where we have nice materials like PEX where it is so easy to run proper size pipes, it could be that what he may want to think is when the bathroom gets remodeled, we're putting a new pipe. When we replace the kitchen sink, we're going to put in some new pipe.
That makes a lot of sense to me.
But the plumber is going to be able to look at this and tell him exactly what the root of his problem is.
Well, John, boy, the time really flew by, and I think we accomplished a lot today. I want to thank you so much for taking time to be with us, and I'll look forward to your next visit.
It's always great being here. I just love the challenging questions that come in, and you know, there's somebody like Dan asks something where we go, oh, now we have to go and do some studying before the next time we come in.
John Freiberger, our guest, Wisconsin registered home inspector, specializes in evaluating older structures, and founder of Freiberger and Associates in Fitchburg, Wisconsin. And he's been a regular on our show for a long, long time. And we'll get him back, obviously, and we'll do this again. And oh, my goodness, tomorrow's Friday. And that means Garden Talk. I can't believe it's Friday already. Doug Soldat will come by. Doug knows a whole lot about lawns. And we're going to have him answer all of your lawn care questions. That's tomorrow on Garden Talk. In the meantime, thank you so much for listening, and please stay with us. Lots more in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.